The Pickersgill Detentions by Andrew McGibbon, starring Ian Richardson, Episode 3, Smoking Wet.
My name is Dr. Henry Pickersgill. Not so long ago, I retired as senior English master at Haunchurst College in Warwickshire. I greatly enjoyed my tenure there, teaching English, but my greatest pleasure is reserved for the memory of the many detentions I gave. A handful of youngsters suspended from evening leisure activities would assemble reluctantly in my classroom, and it was during those ennui-filled moments, free of the tyranny of curricula, that I attempted to enlighten them with a knowledge of the world that the college did not offer tutelage in. One evening in 1958, four boys, Calman, Moorcroft, Smedley, and Hindle Rand, had all been caught selling cigarettes to minors outside the junior common room. Selling cigarettes to lower school youngsters was certainly grounds for dismissal, and yet suddenly I was gripped by the promise of an opportunity that, looking back now, must appear dreadfully irresponsible, but which, at the time, served, I think, as an effective way of teaching these enterprising youngsters about a system they would have to harness well if their enterprise was to succeed in the long term.
Are you planning on joining us this evening, Calman?
Sorry, sir.
Come on, young man, stop hovering like a French buzzard. Close the door behind you and sit down. Why are you here, Moorcroft?
Smoking, sir.
And vending, too, Moorcroft, according to the note from Mr. Hillman. Were you all at it?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Except me, sir. I was trying to buy some for Toby Bushnell in the fourth
year. Ah, the go-between. Fagging for fags, Calman. And what were the rest of you smoking? Cubans, capstans, kippers?
Oh, no, sir. It was cigarettes, and we won't do it again.
Moorcroft, don't be naive.
Well, I won't, sir. I've learnt my lesson. Mr. Hillman has put me straight on that.
Our beloved headmaster is very good at putting people straight, but once a boy has been bent, he remains bent, Moorcroft. I think a different approach might be needed. You say that you have definitely stopped smoking.
Oh, yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
And
yes.
You'll never reach for nor attempt to barter with cigarettes again?
No, sir.
Good, so I trust you'll have no objection to my smoking. What a satisfying taste. Oh, but do forgive me, gentlemen, I forget my manners. Would any of you like a cigarette? Oh, come now, how could you miss out on the delights of cigarette smoke curling into your lungs? Calman, how old are you?
11, sir.
A perfect age to start. I insist you let me guide you through your first smoke.
But, sir...
Don't nibble at the apple, Calman. Be bold and sink your teeth in. Come up here. Now, take one of my cigarettes and clamp one end of it to your lips.
Sir?
Take one of the matches, strike it... Bring the flame to the other end and start inhaling. Now, the rest of you observe how the vacuum created by the change of air pressure along the shaft of the cigarette will draw the flame in, lighting the tobacco. You must pull the smoke into your lungs by sucking the air in.
Oh, sir, this is horrible.
Look at the pleasure on Calman's face. See the unalloyed joy to be had from smoking. I hope you're all watching.
Yes, sir.
Good, because now Moorcroft is going to sell each one of you one of my cigarettes, and you're going to smoke it in front of him. Up here, Moorcroft.
Sir, this is disgraceful.
What? I'm simply facilitating what you've been doing outside the junior common room. Only now you have my blessing, so come on up and make money out of me. That's better. Now, Smedley, Hindle Rand, come up here and form a queue in front of Moorcroft.
Sir?
Right, Moorcroft. Offer Smedley two cigarettes and charge him threepence for each one.
I haven't any money, sir.
Then you'll have to borrow some of Moorcroft. Ask him to lend you sixpence. Go on.
Moorcroft, will you lend me sixpence?
Sir, I haven't any money either.
Do you want me to lend you some? Am I to be your banker and your supplier?
Sir?
Here's a float of... Half a crown in change. Now, I'll expect interest, of course, but first you must work to repay this debt and maintain good relations with me. Give Smedley sixpence. That's it. Now, make your purchase, Smedley, and light one up. Come on. Right, Hindle Rand, show Moorcroft your money.
I've only got a sovereign, sir.
Well, Moorcroft, what are you going to do?
I don't know, sir.
I do. You're going to ask me for more change, and I, as your sleeping partner, will happily supply it. But I must insist you pay me back threepence of the sixpence I lent you, as you now have it to return.
Sir, this doesn't seem fair.
Nonsense, Moorcroft, this is business. Fairness doesn't come into it. Here's change for Hindle Rand's sovereign, minus threepence. Give the man what he's asked for.
I shouldn't have broken into that, sir.
Well, you have, and Moorcroft is obliged to sell you two cigarettes under the terms of my agreement with him. So, with the change showing a deficit of threepence, you are one cigarette up, Hindle Rand. And now Moorcroft owes both of us money. Come along, Kelman. Put that cigarette out. It's time to buy two more.
Sir, I think I've learnt my lesson.
Stop whining, Kelman. Step up to the plate and demand two cigarettes from Moorcroft. He must sell them to you.
Sir, I can't smoke any more.
Of course you can. How do you expect to become an adult if you can't take it like a man, Kelman?
Sir... I want to...
Ah, you want a life. Well, you better ask Moorcroft. I'm sure he'll sell you one of mine.
Sir?
Don't worry, Moorcroft. I'll loan you a pack of Swan at a starting rate of a farthing a match. Come on, Smedley, stump that one out. You see, Moorcroft, there is no point in selling cigarettes if your customers are simply going to sell them on or hoard them. They must be smoked. And the more they are smoked, the more money we shall make together. Smedley, make your purchase.
Sir, I don't want to buy any more cigarettes.
That really isn't the issue. Whether you want them or not, you must buy them. Take a shilling, Moorcroft. Can't you see? Smedley's dying for smoke.
But, sir...
Right, Moorcroft, where are we now? You owe Hindle Rand threepence, and you are in hock to me for a shilling and threepence plus interest. Let's call that 1 and 6 plus 5 and 6 for the advance packet, and a little extra for the careful financial advice. I think this is working out very well. Smedley?
Yes, sir.
Light up. Hindle Rand, you look ready to buy some more cigarettes from Moorcroft.
No, sir.
Cowman, suck, boy, suck. That's it. Draw those intoxicating vapors into your hungry lungs. No smoke. No profit, Moorcroft. And I must have profit or I have to foreclose. And that would be messy. Suck, boys, suck!
Within half an hour, all four boys were green and ready to throw up. To the best of my knowledge, they never smoked again. Though Moorcroft's experience must have stayed with him, for in his adulthood he went on to make a fortune from patenting a steroidal puffer pack for asthma sufferers, and amassed sufficient wealth to send his son to Hornchurst. And it was Moorcroft's son Jonathan who provided me with one of the strangest events I've ever been witness to in detention. Like his father, he too was sent on to me for correction after being caught smoking. Nothing unusual there, you might say, but his choice of tobacco was not easily purchased in the station kiosk. In the early 70s, this new illicit tobacco was enjoyed covertly by many boys in the upper school. Anyway, young Jonathan Moorcroft was a timid fellow around Hornchurst. The sallow young man sported an incredible beard, like a roadway of hair leading to his pink mouth. He sat uncomfortably behind Kelman, Hindle Rand and Smedley, all non-smoking relatives of the gentleman detainees I described earlier.
Good evening to all of you. Thank you for finding the time in your day to attend. It is a beautiful spring evening, is it not? And I thought we could engage with nature's redolent rebirth by talking about colours.
Can I sort of, like, be excused?
Certainly not, Moorcroft.
Oh,
sit up, there's a good fellow. I want you all to find an empty page in your book so we can start. This evening, I want to acquaint you with the startling power of the senses. I'm going to hand each of you a pack of crayons. And I want you to take one colour and draw and fill in a square of that colour on the paper.
Sir, isn't this the kind of thing backward boys do?
You are all in detention. Is that not backward enough for you?
But, sir, we've got housework we can be doing.
And I would be thrilled for you to do it, Kelman, after detention. Now pick a colour and start drawing.
I noticed that Moorcroft was having great trouble concentrating on the task I had just set. He seemed content simply to stare at the crayons. Then he took one out and started drawing uncontrollably. I rebuked him.
A square of colour, Moorcroft, not a map of the underground.
But sensed he had not fully understood my instructions. Presently I called the boys to order.
Now, I want everyone to shut their eyes except Kelman.
Sir?
Kelman is now going to describe the colour of his square to you all, and you have to guess what that colour is. Keep your eyes shut, everybody.
Yes, sir.
Sir?
What,
Yes, even you, Moorcroft. Off you go, Kelman.
My colour is, Violet, sir.
Oh, of course it is, Kelman. And now everyone else knows. So draw another square.
Sir, I really don't see the point.
The point, Kelman, is that you must describe the colour to your blindfolded colleagues by using every word but the name of the colour.
Why, sir?
Because it will stretch your imagination by using word imagery. It is also fun for me, and since you are here for my benefit, that is what I want you to do.
Why can't I just tell them the colour like I did before,
Because if you do, I'll send you to your housemaster, Mr. Teak, who will take great pleasure in caning your hand the colour of your last square. I say again, colour yourself a square and describe it to the others.
Well, there's a big bit that's like a sort of background, only it's like...
While I had been enduring Calman's witless wisecracks, I noticed Moorcroft had become increasingly unhinged. His eyes were wandering, and he was not really with the class. I decided to bring him into the exercise.
Quiet, Calman. I think we'll let someone else have a go. Moorcroft, could you return from orbiting the planet long enough to describe your colour to everyone else in the class? Shut your eyes, the rest of you.
There was a strange rustling noise as Moorcroft fished around in his pockets for something. Then he started on a description of his crayon lines that was, without doubt, the most beautiful I had ever heard.
Peach and nectar streams that don't have a beginning. And oh, oh, wheels riding over me the size of waterfalls. And there's birds filling the sky. There's no sunlight. It's just a dark, frothing loneliness that I can't embrace. It's just too much. There's too many colours coming at me.
I think it's red, sir.
He reacted very badly to the laughter and began seeing the boys as a threat.
Oh, don't keep coming at me with your spears and rocks. I know the truth is coming to get me. Spare me, spare me!
At this point, I decided to step in. As I crossed the room, he pulled out one of his special cigarettes and tried to light it.
Now, Moorcroft, striking a match is not a legitimate way to describe a colour.
His hand was shaking, and he seemed to have great difficulty bringing the lit match to the end of his roll-up. Then, just as I made it to his desk to discipline him, his hand slipped, and the flame caught the end of his beard. In no more than 1 second, his facial hair exploded into a bright magnesium white flash. I have to say, it was spectacular watching it incinerate so completely. Some clown shouted,
"White, sir!"
immediately afterwards, but I ignored it and covered Moorcroft's face with my gown to put out the flame. It was then I noticed that his face was badly pitted and scarred by acne. His beard was not so much a free expression as a natural camouflage. Those frozen, stoat-blue eyes that seconds before flashed at me from a nest of facial brambles now looked like marbles dropped in cake dough. He was expelled a few months afterwards. Later, he left to become a voluntary worker in the West Indies, helping poor tobacco workers make good money, selling their product directly to customers and cutting out the middleman. He wrote to me once, enclosing a picture of himself complete with new beard, and stating that his product was fresh and untainted by chemicals. He now owned his own plane and a mansion overlooking a beautiful Jamaican beach. I was very proud of him, and delighted too that he'd got over the horrible embarrassment of his facial depilation. He plans to stay there for some time, at least until the year 2015, when he'll be released from Kingston Prison.
And he'll keep your confidence.
In Smoking Wet, Dr. Pickersgill was played by Ian Richardson, Moorcroft by Phil Cornwell, Calman by Martin Hyder, Hindle Rand by Dominic Hawksley, and Smedley by Nick Romero. Studio production was by Jonathan Ruffle. The Pickersgill Detentions was written and directed by Andrew McGibbon and is a Curtains for Radio production for Radio 4.